This is the IBJ podcast for the week of November 15th, 2021, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. For this week's episode and next week's, we'll depart from the usual format just a smidge. We're going to have a two-part interview with a subject who certainly merits the expanded format, Indianapolis restaurateur Martha Hoover, the founder and owner of Patachou Inc. For the folks who aren't from central Indiana, here is a quick primer. The Patachou family of restaurants first took root in 1989 with the original Cafe Patachou at 49th and Pennsylvania. Today there are 13 restaurants in the family spread over several distinct concepts, including one that's probably best described as a night spot and listening lounge. The original innovation for Patachou was using fresh, seasonal, and local ingredients for scratch cooking at a time well before it was trendy. In 2020, Hoover was nominated for Outstanding Restaurateur in the National category by the James Beard Foundation. This was the sixth time she was named a James Beard semifinalist. She has a national reputation as a pioneering force in the industry and is often called upon by the national media for her insights, including during the pandemic by the New York Times. For this week's episode, we're going to stick closely to how Patachou weathered the pandemic and all of the related complications, such as the current labor shortage. Obviously, we're living through a once-in-a-lifetime crisis for the restaurant industry. Patachou, like millions of other small businesses in the United States, applied for and received small business loans through the Federal Paycheck Protection Program. This was money specifically intended to keep their employees on payroll and cover other vital expenses. With some 300 employees, Patachou's need was significant, and we'll talk about this later in the episode. We'll also discuss the viability of Indianapolis's downtown for restaurants in light of the recent closure of Patachou's Napolese Pizzeria, just south of Monument Circle. I'll also get her take on the safety of downtown. We'll discuss the changes made at Patachou's management level to reduce expenses, streamline operations, and build resiliency into the organization. Patachou now has plans to expand again, so we'll delve into that. And I'll ask her about how long she plans to continue running the whole enterprise. So, without any further ado, here is part one of our interview. I'm pleased to welcome to the podcast Martha Hoover, founder and owner of Patachou Inc. How are you?
Thank you, Mason. So happy to be here.
Before we get going, I want to take a quick census of the Patachou family of restaurants as it stands right now, because there's always a little something happening. There are five Cafe Patachou restaurants.
That's true.
In Indianapolis. There is the Patachou in Roggeville.
Yes.
Two Napolese pizzerias, one in the Fashion Mall and one next to the Mothership, 49th and Central.
Our Mothership brand, Patachou, Cafe Patachou, yes. Okay. Right next door, 49th and Penn.
Three Public Greens.
Actually, there are two Public Greens that are operational now. Our Public Greens downtown has not yet reopened.
Oh, okay. Do you plan to reopen it?
Yeah, at some point, but the office building in which we reside is not occupied yet.
Right, and that's the Cummins office building.
Exactly. Right.
In addition, there's 114, which is a micro bar.
Bar 114.
I'm sorry, Bar 114. Is it also a dining room, a small dining room?
It's, as Indianapolis Monthly said yesterday in its very lofty and kind review of Bar 114, it is a closet that happens to have 16 seats in it. And yes, it is a cocktail bar with a very edited menu.
And Apocalypse Burger, which is across 49th Street.
That's right.
From there. So my recollection, over the last 20 months, there was one permanent closure, and that was the Napolese downtown.
That's right.
In the Kite Building at the Washington and Meridian. And that decision just came a few months ago in July and August.
The decision came, as in any decision in business, you don't make it impetuously and then get to deliver on it right away, always. The decision was made, but we needed to negotiate with the landlords before we could really close. But truthfully, the business corridor, that Napolese 30 South was in the business corridor downtown, and the business corridor has just not come back.
So the sales just, you didn't see the sales coming back
and thought this is the time to.
Yeah, I mean, coming out of COVID in particular was the time in which my direction for the company was to bolster anything that contributed to our bottom line and gave us great security, removed vulnerability from our operating system. Napoli's 30 did not fit in that paradigm.
What is your feeling about downtown long-term? Because you have two other locations. You have one Cafe Patachou about three or four blocks to the west, and then they said the Public Greens is three or four blocks to the east. How do you feel about downtown as being remaining feasible for restaurants down?
Well, I think there's a lot that goes into feasibility, especially when you're talking about restaurants. You know, they're very complicated operational systems. But truthfully, I think downtown has, we are, for instance, Patachou on the Park. Downtown has a really robust business. A lot of it is not based on office people. It's based on State House and healthcare workers from IU. And a lot of our business is from the travelers that come into Indianapolis for conventions. That's in a completely different position than something like Public Greens Cummins, which is truly in an office environment where the office worker has not come back. So it's hard to make a blanket statement of what I think downtown businesses will be like in the future, because there's so many nuances to operating in downtown Indianapolis. You can be one street over and there is density of population, but if you're on the wrong side of the street, or you know, two streets away or a block off, it becomes problematic.
Now, our office is a block away from the Napoli's 30. It's right in the center of all that. And we learned a couple days ago that somebody had been shot and killed in the Five Guys.
I saw that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, on our block. It was on Sunday.
During the daytime,
yeah,
as well.
4:45 p.m., which on a weekday is when I would be walking home. What is your level of concern about crime and violence downtown?
Well, truthfully, my level of concern about crime and violence is not just limited to downtown. And I think that we're really naive to say that criminal behavior only happens in certain areas. But we have seen a heightened issue downtown. You know, 3 years ago, before COVID, our last speakers forum for the Patachou Foundation was about gun violence. And as a former sex crimes prosecutor, gun violence has always been at the top of, you know, it's a huge societal issue. And I think that we always like to talk about these one-offs or, you know, these criminal things that happen and act like they happen in some vacuum. They really don't. And there's so much that goes into conversations regarding violence and gun violence and homicide and areas in which these things occur that I think it's just too complex for me to give a blanket answer and say, oh, the crime's terrible in this area.
So you're comfortable for now in general with the level of safety downtown?
I mean, I think it's finally being addressed by our city. It's too big of a problem to not be addressed. I'm hoping that some of the measures that are being put in place really have an impact and can reduce criminal behavior, especially behavior involving guns. Truthfully, Mason, gun violence downtown is not what got me to close Napoli's 30.
As we stand right now, the financial position of the Patachou family of restaurants, how are things?
We're very healthy, thank you for asking. Mm-hmm. And the health actually comes from a variety of sources. It comes from the fact that we are better managed today as a result of things that we learned during COVID, especially the early days when we were mandated to close. We are better managed today. We are more economically efficient. We're more data-driven with our technology. And we have stripped away layers that added to waste and took away from our bottom line. But also, customers have really stepped up, and I think the community needs to be commended, because even during the worst part of the pandemic, customers really spoke with their dollars.
How are sales trending right now?
They're up. Mm-hmm. I think everyone in the restaurant world is finding that there has been remarkable pent-up demand. Plus, there are now additional channels by which people can consume your food. Third-party delivery, or if it's third-party or first-party delivery, it doesn't matter. That has been a remarkably additive source of income for us.
So you, like a lot of restaurateurs, embrace the delivery or the takeout during the pandemic, and you're going to plan on keeping those kinds of
services. Here's the thing about what we learned early on in the pandemic was that this the fear of technology, the fear of delivery, the fear of significant carryout business was no validity to that fear. And the fear was really not that we were afraid of those items. We just thought we didn't need them. We didn't realize that there was a need. But beyond the need, what has happened is there's been a change in how people want to access restaurants. And, you know, that came about actually before COVID. It didn't come about just because of COVID. But like everything else, due to the pandemic, the pandemic didn't just shine a light on it. It kind of lit a match to a rag of that was soaked in gas, you know what I mean? And I don't think you can be in business in 2021, 2022 and on, and ignore the what technology can do to add to your bottom line.
What other elements of your operations that you discovered during the pandemic are you gonna carry forward?
I mean, I think one of the things that most restaurants did right away in all these quote-unquote pivots that restaurants did is they edited their menus, and their menus became remarkably engineered. I think that's something, again, we embrace technology today more significantly than we embraced it pre-COVID. And that's a broad subject. What does technology mean in the restaurant world? We use our data. We know what people are buying, and we know what works on our menu and what doesn't. And so we have engineered our menu so that it doesn't produce the level of waste. I mean, that's the bottom line. What COVID taught us is that whatever produced waste within our ecosystem had to be cured. And that's what we've worked on.
Could you share something that was producing waste?
I made the decision pre-COVID, at the beginning of 2020, that we would make some significant changes in our executive leadership team of the company. And that produced a sea change of effectiveness in the company. We gave opportunity to people who otherwise were stuck at mid-level positions, and we cleansed house with some people who had been here a long time and were resistant to making the necessary changes that needed to be made. This having nothing to do with the pandemic, but we were the great recipients of that change at the beginning of 2020. We also happened to have a stroke of luck. Somebody on our executive team, a relatively new member of our executive team as it was formed in early 2020, who is a pre-PhD student at Harvard. I always have to work that in because that's a matter of pride. And her subject area is sustainability, risk management, and resiliency. So we took her knowledge and created a resiliency team within a couple of weeks of being closed down. We were in resiliency mode. When people were still talking about whether or not they should be doing zero contact or no contact deliveries, we were talking about the next 5 to 10 year plan.
I don't want to embarrass you, but you did come close to alluding to this. This is your daughter, or one of your daughters, right?
It is one of my daughters. It is Rachel Hoover. Yeah. It is one of my daughters. I have three children. I know this isn't like the part of the podcast where you care about this, but I have three children, one of whom lives in Indianapolis and works for the company.
How many employees do you have right now?
We have between 275 and 300.
Okay. And how many did you have prior to the pandemic?
We're down about 20%.
20%.
From if you compare pre-pandemic and post-pandemic employee counts.
And where did you lose employees in that 18-month transition?
Well, you know, going back to our data collection, we collected a lot of data on that. Admittedly, we made the decision, the hard decision, as to who to bring back and who to separate from. Again, going to anything that created waste or created inefficiencies in our system, we decided to address those issues. Some people, we made the decision that they were not going to come back to the company. As you know from your business reporting, there have been a lot of people who have left industries, restaurant industry being one of them. So we had a certain number of people who decided that their lifestyle, that the restaurant industry no longer suited their lifestyle or their life goals. And those people left as well. But we were in, truthfully, a really fortunate position in that the vast majority of our pre-COVID employees wanted their positions back with the company. And we were able to bring 80% of them back. And that's what I'd like to focus on. Of course, people who left are, we've kept up with a good number of them. Some people left because they decided to switch industries. Some people left because their home life changed significantly with virtual school, taking care of parents became more prominent in their life, all sorts of reasons that people left. And it's so nuanced that I think it's really hard to just address it in a simple answer.
Yeah, I think we've had five different podcasts talking about this issue, and we still haven't solved it. I don't know how that happened. Now, you're a well-recognized person inside the national restaurant industry, and you partnered with, it was Indeed, the job, online job service, and yeah. OpenTable, what I know as a reservation service, but I'm sure they do more than that, for a month-long in October a hiring program. What has your experience been? Have you experienced the same labor crunch that a lot of other restaurants are, or are you happy with the candidates you're getting and are able to fill the positions you have open?
We're not experiencing the same level of crunch that we know other restaurateurs to be experiencing. And I think that comes from the fact that, as we just stated, we retained 80% of our original staff, and we're able to recruit people who are very interested and motivated by Potashew itself because of our internal culture. And, you know, this internal culture didn't just happen after the pandemic. We didn't enter the pandemic and go, oh my gosh, we need to do better for our staff. We have been a different type of restaurant company since 1989. At first, quite accidentally, admittedly, and then after year five or six, remarkably intentionally, the way we created the culture and maintained the culture has made some significant differences, I believe, in why people come to the company in the first place and why they stay with the company for the amount of time that they stay. And I think that has really been a distinguisher for us.
Before we get too much further, I had a question that I wanted to ask 10 minutes ago. Just in terms of sales, can you give us a sense of where you are right now in sales as opposed to, say, this time 2 years ago? Like, what percentage of sales were you?
What are you asking exactly? You want me to tell you what percentage my sales are up or down or neutral?
Compared to your sales in, let's say, the second half of 2019, where are your sales right now? Are they 20% below that? Are they 10% above that?
Our system is complex, as you know, because we have a lot of different concepts. And we have changed a lot coming out of COVID. not just closing one location, but we have limited hours. We just reopened Bar 114. Actually, our opening weekend is coming up. We did a soft open last weekend. We are operating fewer hours, which I think is significant, and we're operating differently and fewer locations. But our sales are up over 2019. I don't want to, if you don't mind, I don't want to give information as to the percentage that they're up. I think that gives a distorted view of what's going on.
Okay, let's take a quick break to digest this information. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm. With more than 625 attorneys across 11 offices, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with the latest episode of the IBJ Podcast and part one of our two-part interview with restaurateur Martha Hoover. We also discussed the vital importance of federal financial assistance during the pandemic, for example, the Paycheck Protection Program, which you might remember from the acronym PPP. It provided loans for millions of small business owners. Patachew Inc. was approved in April 2020 for a $2,048,000 PPP loan. In January 2021, as a second draw from the program became available, Patachew was approved for a $2 million loan. As you'll recall, these loans are forgivable, in part or in whole, if the recipients meet prescribed requirements. In May of this year, Patachew Inc. was approved for $4.3 million in grants through the Federal Restaurant Revitalization Fund. These funds can be used for expenses such as payroll, rent, maintenance, and operations. Now here, Martha delves into the existential crisis that faced restaurateurs from the beginning of the pandemic. And quickly, I'll note that you'll hear some rain in the background toward the end of this segment.
As part of the federal restaurant reinvigoration program, the many billions of dollars are made available to restaurants like yours to help them get back on their feet. And Patachew, being one of the largest in Indiana, I think received $4.3 million. Is that right?
We received what we were allowed to receive based on our payroll, rent, and expenses.
Right. And these are grants that you can use for, I think, until 2023 or so. And how are you planning on using that money?
The money was used. I mean, the money wasn't fully used. The money is being used. I mean, exactly within the intention of the congressional laws. You know, that money was extraordinarily valuable. We lost millions of dollars in revenue during the closures. The closures were really, seriously, some of the worst, darkest moments of my professional life because we were just cut off and we had no idea how long anything would last. We're not unique. All small businesses that were forced to close, you know, hair salons, gyms, restaurants, all face the same challenges and obstacles. But when you are closed and you don't know if you're going to be closed for 2 weeks, 2 months, or however long, it's really impossible. Your cash flow is cut off immediately. It was horrible, horrible, horrible. If it were not for the federal government aiding restaurants and businesses like mine, we would not have been able to keep our doors open very likely. And this is the thing I think people forget now. We're almost into 2022. The original PPP, Payroll Protection Plan, was meant just for that, to protect payroll, to pay for people to remain on the payroll and to stay employed. The PPP was meant for originally a 2 to 4 week period of time. But how long were we closed? And each jurisdiction that we're in Hamilton County and Marion County, had a variety of closures, they had different measures for closures for how to return, how to reopen. It was incredibly difficult to navigate. But the bottom line is our heartbeat, our life source of financial sustainability, our cash flow was cut off abruptly for a period of time that was indeterminate. It was frightening. Mm-hmm.
But there are hundreds of people, you know, in your employ who are relying on you or who have been relying on you, I mean, well, to make a living.
It's not just the people, it's their families and the tentacles of what they do in the community and how they live and their own, pursuing their own goals, financial and otherwise. I mean, what bothers me a little bit about how those questions are asked about the PPP and the revitalization fund, it sounds like that just goes into a restaurateur's pocket and there's no financial fiduciary responsibility of how that money is to be used. The money was not just awarded based on me saying I would like that amount of money. There was a very fixed formula as to how that money was awarded. And it was tied to payroll and rent. And that's how we got what we got. And that's what we used the money for, is to support our payroll and rent.
Do you feel like you have what you need now to sail forward?
Absolutely, we do. But again, that money was from the government, was a vital boost at a time when it was critically needed. But we didn't just say operations as normal because we've got this shot in the arm. We took our fiduciary duties very seriously. In the first place, we knew that there was a great potential that we might have to pay that money back, right? So we needed to be stewards of the money.
Yeah, that was the PPP funds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Secondly, we understood that there would be oversight from the government. So we were not at all sloppy about it. We took it really seriously. But beyond that, it's what saved my company. So I was not going to do anything foolish or foolhardy with that money. But what COVID did is it gave us the opportunity to look internally and see where our fault lines were. And we determined that there were some critical weaknesses in our organization, but that the strengths of our organization far outshadowed any weakness, and that our new executive team could really strategically and sustainably address our weaknesses so that when we came out of COVID, we would be infinitely stronger than it was when we walked into it.
Do you have plans at this point to begin growing again?
We do, actually. We have plans to expand locally with a couple of additional locations of Cafe Parachu. And we have plans to expand out of market in another state as early as 2022 and 2023.
Wow, okay. Now you had looked at other markets before.
We have.
Yeah, and for whatever reason you chose not to do it at that point, is there something different this time?
I think we're a better run organization. I think we have a structure, a team, an executive team in place, and a structure, financial structure, that can translate to other markets. You know, when you expand, so many restaurants expand really quickly. I've never done that. I've been around since 1989. Any expansion, I don't care if you're Shake Shack or Martha Hoover Cafe Parachu, each additional location adds a level of burden to the organization that has to be met with some strategy and sustainability. So no matter what we do, it has to be built into our resiliency plan that takes us out another 10 years.
What markets outside of Indianapolis are you considering?
I'd rather not say right now.
Okay.
We're in the middle of negotiations, so.
And where in Indianapolis or the area are you looking at for new Parachus?
We are looking in the downtown area, very vital areas that we think are downtown. We're also looking on the north side, northern communities of Fisher and Westfield.
Okay. And when you say downtown, you mean downtown Indianapolis?
Yes.
Okay, just communities within what we consider downtown Indianapolis.
Yes.
Okay. Tell me exactly where.
No.
When might we know?
As soon as I have a signed lease. Okay. There is no reason to talk about things at other, you know, I have restaurant colleagues that are always saying what they're going to do. I'd rather say what we're doing.
Okay. So the rain is reminding us that our time is running short. Now here's the horrifying part of the interview for me, where I have to do the math.
Oh, shoot.
And say, if you were 34 years old in 1989, you are in your mid-60s now.
I am beyond mid-60s, but thank you for being very bad at math.
You're welcome. So the point of the question is, have you started thinking about or made any sort of meaningful direction or progress in succession? Have you thought about what happens in the next 10 or 15 years as far as leadership of the company?
You know, that's what I've been working on over the last 5 years, is what is going to happen to Potter Shoe. Potter Shoe today is a legacy brand. We have remarkable history, and I believe we have remarkable future as well. The good thing, I believe, is that even though I am, as you said, mid-60s, we'll go with that, I still really love my industry and I really love my business. Actually, I consider myself to be one of the most fortunate people I know. I won the job lottery. I won the industry lottery. And I really mean that. I believe there is huge future growth for my company. As you know, we talk, we're going into other markets. And the thing I can say is I'm not tired. I love so much what we're building. And it's so much more than just serving food, so much more than serving meals. My restaurant group really offers something that I think other restaurant groups miss, in that we offer professional career pathways for people. We offer a company that says we will help you in every step of your life cycle. We're just not worried about you or concerned about you while we serve food during these operational hours, has made a huge difference in the trajectory of our company. You know, Rich Melman is a seasoned restaurant veteran of the Let Us Entertain You group out of Chicago, one of the most successful legends of the restaurant world. And I heard him say once that restaurants don't just fail. Their owners, their leaderships fail, and the reason they fail is they get tired. And I'm not tired, and I don't believe my concepts are tired. I believe that we are well positioned to remain relevant. In fact, probably more than relevant. We're trendsetting in ways that matter to businesses in 2022 and beyond.
No. I have a target for when I want to retire. Do you have a target for when you want to retire?
No, I do not.
Is there an understanding with anybody in the organization that they are next in line or any sort of succession like that?
No, because unless you're also a very bad mathematician and a bad physician, I think I'm going to be here for a while.
You don't want me for either, trust me.
No, I know that was kind of a flippant answer, and I really didn't mean that. As of today, I have no plans on going anywhere. I still enjoy building my company. And when that day comes, I've talked to other CEOs, founders, restaurateurs, people not in the restaurant business, colleagues that I have all over the place, and you know, the ones that are in my age category are kind of in two different groups. They're people that are tired and they're people that are inspired. And I'm in the inspired group. I'm sticking around.
I'm glad to hear it.
Okay, that wraps up part one of our interview. In part two, we're going to widen the focus to talk about inherent problems within the restaurant industry that made the pandemic that much harder to weather. We'll also discuss some of the elements of the restaurant industry that laymen don't fully understand, and in particular, the things that the media, including IBJ, gets wrong when it reports on restaurants. I hope you'll join us. Now, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories in the latest issue of IBGA I want to bring to your attention. First up, 20 months into the pandemic, it has become clear that there won't be a rush of white-collar workers back to the office once the threat has passed. Susan Orr digs into the wide range of responses from local companies to the question of maintaining a remote workforce. Also in this week's issue, Emily Ketterer explores the rise in Indiana of Delta 8 THC, which has effects similar to traditional marijuana and is being sold in shops across the state thanks to a legal gray area that many state officials would rather not talk about. And Leslie Bonilla Muniz reports on the long-awaited cleanup of the Black Mountain Industrial Site on Indianapolis's Near East Side. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or online at IBJ.com. I will say it is quite a bit easier to access all of the latest local news about business and politics and all of IBJ's data on Central Indiana's business community and economy if you're a subscriber. It works out to about $2 per week for actionable information you're not going to find anywhere else. Just go to IBJ.com and click on the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.